Hello and welcome to the Risk Map Podcast, part of the global conversation on geopolitics and security produced by Control Risks, the leading international risk consultancy. I'm Charles Hecker in London.
Also in London, I'm Jean Devlin. Welcome to the podcast.
Jean, this is our first podcast of 2017. And as we did with our edition at the end of last year, we're going to talk about the publication that gives our podcast its name, Risk Map, our annual forecast of political, security, and operational risk. Control Risks released Risk Map 2017 just last month. We've been publishing Risk Map for more than 20 years, and over that time, it's evolved into a multimedia website with video, podcasts, infographics, and articles, all written by our global team of political risk analysts. Visit riskmap.controlrisks.com for the full view.
For the next few podcasts, we're going to highlight content from the Risk Map website and interview the analysts who produce our annual forecast. This week, we're going to look at U.S.-Russia relations, an increasingly hot topic in the early U.S. presidency of Donald Trump. We will also talk to our Philippines analyst about Rodrigo Duterte, that country's firebrand populist president. But first, we'll talk with our global issues analyst about how companies will deal with a heightened level of uncertainty in 2017. Chuck recently spoke to Jonathan Wood.
Jonathan, one of the articles for Risk Map 2017 features a boat and two animals, and we're calling it Arks, Sharks, and Whales. Jonathan, what did you have in mind when you wrote this piece, and what sort of issues are we looking at?
Well, when we looked at this piece, we were trying to think about how companies and other types of organizations would respond to a period of strategic uncertainty in the international business environment. A lot of this is being driven, of course, as we know, by political changes in the US and the EU, which have traditionally upheld a more liberal trade-based international order. And so we're interested in how companies will respond to this, and we wanted to typologize some potential strategies. And we defined these as arks, sharks, and whales to look at different ways that sectors and organizations would adapt to uncertainty and unpredictability.
Okay, so the world order may be changing, the business climate may be changing, companies are going to have to adapt, they're going to have to change their strategies or maybe change their tactics. Jonathan, what's an ark?
Well, we look at arks as the types of companies that are pulling in the oars, battening down the hatches, and looking to ride out a period of strategic uncertainty by focusing on their core businesses. There are a number of different companies, especially in the commodity-based sectors, so both energy and mining, but also retail, which have been caught out by large-scale expansions, whether into emerging markets or into costly new projects. And when global market conditions turn, those types of projects become unsustainable. And what we've seen over the last few years and what we expect to continue to see in 2017 is companies shedding unproductive assets, unprofitable assets, and focusing on what made them big multinationals in the first place, their core businesses, their core markets, and really trying to preserve and protect their capital, their employment base, and their key capabilities and capacities.
Okay, moving on, tell us, what does a shark do in uncertain times?
Well, just as some companies are going to be focusing on their core activities, it's also safe to say that this uncertain environment is going to breed certain new opportunities. And some of these are going to come from disruption in key sectors. And one of the areas where we've seen a lot of disruption over the last few years is in finance, where the application of technology to the financial services industry, the new development of peer-to-peer payment systems, of cryptocurrencies, of financial technology that's looking to link, if you like, the middle-income classes in all of these emerging markets to the global financial system. There's a lot of disruption there and a lot of opportunity because those underlying trends are continuing at the national level, even if the global economic situation remains in flux. So as companies continue to pursue these emerging opportunities, and I should also hasten to add that that includes countries that are just coming back on the international investment landscape, say because sanctions are being lifted. In just the last year, that's certainly Iran in a very big way. It's Cuba with respect to the U.S. It's Myanmar. More recently, it's Sudan. These are frontier markets, but they're places where some opportunities have been off the table for a long time. And so some companies that have a bit more risk appetite, maybe a bit more configured for these sectors that are being disrupted, are going to look and seize and hunt opportunities in these higher risk locations and to obtain yield, and particularly at a time when global interest rates remain very, very low.
Jonathan, if you call somebody a whale, they might get offended. What does a whale do in uncertain times?
Well, one of the other strategies, of course, for responding to strategic uncertainty is to simply try and become so diverse and so big that no single event is going to really swamp the boat. And what we're looking at in Wales are those companies that are diversifying or gaining a very strategic and in some cases, monopolistic market position in order to ride out these periods of uncertainty. And that is especially, for example, in the technology sector, where you have in a number of markets, key players that really dominate those markets, sometimes with more than 50% of market share. But it also applies to companies that are making strategic acquisitions, positioning themselves for longer term growth. And if one part of their portfolio is maybe not performing as well because of its exposure to certain countries or exposure to certain industries, some maybe counter-cyclical or other parts of a more diversified portfolio will wind up performing well. So we're seeing companies spread out both geographically, but also in terms of their sectors and industries. And notably, if you look at the agribusiness and pharmaceutical sectors, this is one place where consolidation has really been at the top of the strategic agenda in 2016, and we expect to continue to be a big trend in 2017. As companies shield themselves against uncertainty and unpredictability in this way.
Jonathan, another quick question on this. We're not necessarily saying that any one of these strategies is better than another. It's just that different companies will strike different poses or different approaches faced with the risk landscape of the coming year.
Well, that's exactly right. And what we've done in this analysis is look at different sectors and how they're responding, but certainly every company is going to need to take into account its own footprint, its own geographic exposure, its own types of operations, the markets and sectors where it wants to be operating in. And then, of course, and perhaps most importantly, its risk appetite and risk tolerance and its desire to either engage in new but potentially higher risk opportunities or perhaps more conservatively to preserve capital, to shore up its balance sheet and to position itself for the inevitable global recovery once the global situation becomes a little bit more clear, perhaps towards the end of 2017, but certainly we anticipate over the medium term.
Great, Jonathan, that's fantastic. Jonathan Wood, Director of Global Issues.
Chuck, thanks. Rodrigo Duterte's elevation to the post of President of the Philippines fits squarely within the global populist trend, one of our main themes for RiskMap 2017. With a combination of rhetoric, force, sheer guts, and colorful language, Duterte has transformed domestic politics in one of Southeast Asia's most important countries. But what will Duterte mean for international investors? Will he upend the investment climate much in the same way he has disrupted the country's internal scene? I recently spoke with Alicia Hua in our Singapore office about the strongman in Manila. Alicia, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Jean. Thanks for having me.
So what are the three things to watch on the political front in 2017?
Well, first, I think we can expect more knee-jerk, quick fixes to complex social problems. And typical of this is the president's war on drugs, a campaign that has been widely associated with a rise in extrajudicial killings in the Philippines. The country is also at risk of becoming increasingly authoritarian. President Duterte has already displayed a preference for sidelining his domestic critics. He imposed a nationwide state of emergency in 2016 and continues to float the idea of imposing martial law even today. However, despite his controversial style, we think that the president is unlikely to be ousted by the Philippine Senate as things stand. And that's because his rhetoric continues to resonate with ordinary Filipinos who regard the president to be a blunt but effective instrument and who therefore continue to support him.
Thanks, Alicia. So we know the security environment has for a long time been a concern in the Philippines. Do you see this changing for the better or for the worse over the course of the next year?
Well, the war on drugs has already claimed some 6,000 lives since its inception last year, and we do see the security risk landscape changing as a result of a marked rise in vigilante killings and drive-by shootings. A due process has also been sidelined as a whole. We therefore see the security risk landscape changing with risk to the upside beyond just Mindanao over the highly controversial anti-drug campaign.
And what are the main implications that you foresee this year for foreign business from Duterte remaining in office for the foreseeable future?
Economic management as a whole has been left to experienced technocrats, and so the regulatory environment is unlikely to be negatively affected. In fact, the finance department has just proposed a comprehensive tax reform package to lower personal and corporate taxes with the aim of making the Philippines more competitive. So this is a risk-positive development for business. Security-wise, it's unlikely that foreign businesses will be directly targeted by the anti-drug campaign, but there is a risk that the war on drugs may be deployed as a pretext by predatory officials to extort foreigners.
Thanks, Alicia, for your forecast for the Philippines for 2017. Back over to you, Chuck.
Jean, thanks. The relationship between the United States and Russia always has its ups and downs, but it's one of those geopolitical constants that helps set the way the world spins. With the election of President Donald Trump, though, Russia has become a feature of the national and international discussion like never before. What can we look forward to from the Putin-Trump relationship? Will the world continue to spin as reliably as before? Emily Ferris, our Russia analyst, gave us her views. Emily, the question of the relationship between the United States and Russia has never, ever been discussed like this before. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about the outlook for U.S.-Russia relations for 2017, some of the points you raised in RiskMap, and what you're following for the year to come.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, probably the most important thing is the question of whether Trump is going to repeal or at least ease partially some of the sanctions on Russia. And that's what Russia's most hoping for. The Russians originally seemed to think that they were so excited by Trump's presidency and that he would offer such a breath of fresh air. I think now the Russians are much more cautious in their approach because he is such an unpredictable character. We don't know the likely course of his foreign policy. It's really impossible to predict. And if he and Putin were to come at loggerheads, there's no saying who would win.
Putin engaged in a fairly unusual brand of diplomacy at the very end of the Obama presidency. Mm. Obama expelled 35 Russian diplomats and added to the list of sanctions already in effect on Russia. But Putin did not retaliate. Mm-hmm. He did not do what happens in most diplomatic incidents, and that is respond in a tit-for-tat sort of fashion. He's left the door wide open for Trump, hasn't he?
Exactly. I mean, this was perceived by the Russians as one of Obama's parting moves to expel what the Americans say were Russian intelligence operatives and essentially to try to obstruct Russia's future relationship with Trump. So I think Putin took the view that he was going to completely ignore this and, as you say, leave the door open for negotiations with Trump, so start off on the right foot with Trump. So Putin was able to claim the moral high ground by seeming very restrained.
Do you think the appointment of Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State foretells of an easing relationship between Washington and Moscow? Or do you think that Tillerson, once he takes office, will change his outlook as a diplomat?
I think we've already seen a bit of a rolling back on Tillerson's relationship with Russia because initially it's been quite obvious that he hasn't supported sanctions because they obstruct a lot of business, particularly the business that he was involved in as CEO of ExxonMobil. But when we look at his confirmation hearing, he was very critical of Russia. And I suppose you could say that that was his way of being diplomatic so that he would get elected. But I also think that in his role, he will have to be much more restrained.
The business community, both in the United States and certainly here in Europe, is, I think, pretty fed up with the sanctions regime. I mean, I think they'd like to see some sort of disassociation between politics and business so they can just get on with it. There may be some relief coming up then from the United States, but from Europe, as far as Russia's concerned, the sanctions regime will likely stay in place. Is that your forecast?
Well, I think the US sanctions and the EU sanctions, while they are over the same thing, you know, Russia's military intervention in Ukraine and annexation of Crimea, the approach that the US and the EU have to Russia is very different. So it doesn't necessarily follow that because the US might partially ease sanctions that the EU would follow on afterwards. So I think we're forecasting at the moment that the EU sanctions would be partially eased from something like mid-2017 when they are up for renewal. And I'm talking more about the economic sanctions, not the individual sanctions that relate to Putin's inner circle and individuals that are perceived as giving financial or political support to Crimea and Ukraine under Russian influence. But yes, I do think there are definitely some elements in the EU that would very much like to see a partial easing of sanctions so that they can just get on with their business deals.
Great. Emily Ferris, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck. Before we sign off, here's a look at some of the other topics we'll be talking about in the coming weeks.
What's the way forward for Turkey? will the country shift to a presidential system of government do anything to help Recep Tayyip Erdogan confront and tame the country's relentless and expanding terrorist threat? Will Turkey be able to live up to its economic potential in the coming year?
Meanwhile, what lessons has the international business community learned about investing in Iran in the past year? How can new entrants into the market apply those lessons to their benefit?
Which African nation will build the world's next Dubai? Of the three countries aiming at becoming the latest global trading powerhouse, who's got the best chances?
That's it for the year's first edition of the Risk Map podcast. For more about risk and opportunity in 2017, don't forget to visit the Risk Map website on riskmap.controlrisks.com. This is Jean Devlin in London. Thanks for listening.
Jean, thanks very much for co-hosting and for the chat. That's all for January, but we look forward to getting in front of the microphones again in early February. Until then, thanks for listening and goodbye from London.